I'm John Williams. Thanks for dialing in. If you saw a couple of $100 bills floating down the street and you knew that a Brinks truck had been robbed recently, would you turn the couple of $100 bills in? We did a little quick survey of those of us talking to you on the radio today, and many of my colleagues have said they would keep the money. But I don't think I was clear with whether or not they knew in this scenario that the Brinks truck was missing some money. If you and I are walking down the street and we find money, of course we put it in our pocket. John, I lost a rosary case with $500 bills in it. Retracing my steps, I couldn't find it. Later, I got a phone call from a girl who had gone into my manicure place, had gone to every single business in that parking lot, and had gone to the police, and she finally called me and told me that she had found it. She gave me the money back. I gave her one of the $500 bills. John, you should give the money you found to a homeless shelter, and the guilt is gone. Yeah, I suppose so. That was an interesting story, and we still don't know what happened to the $300,000 missing over in the Austin Oak Park area. It's 11:34. I wonder what Carrie Peck, the elder law attorney, would do in a situation like that. Hi, Carrie Peck.
Hello, John. How are you today? You probably spring day.
Don't want to answer that question. But there's so many, you know, particulars about the hypothetical. Like, if you find a 20 or nobody finds a $100 bill, but if you find a dollar bill, I found a dollar bill, you put it in your pocket. But at some point, it gets to be enough money that you think, something's up here. Like, if you found $10,000, I think you would think, this is somebody's money. This is not mine, and it's too much money for somebody to be missing. So where's that line is the question I've been asking myself lately.
Well, I think that obviously it's an ethical question, and you have to be comfortable with your decision.
Yeah, which is maybe what that one person was getting to. If you give it to a homeless shelter, you found the money, you're not keeping it, and you've made a very generous donation. It's a win-win, maybe. So Carrie is the elder law attorney. We often talk about wills, estate plans, power of attorney. And we will, 312-981-7200 if you have a question. You have often, and I was telling Wendy Snyder about this morning, you have told us many times that it's not uncommon for you to, in fact, you mentioned this in your book, encounter signatures for sex cases. What is a signature for sex case?
Well, typically a signature for sex case is a scenario in which a younger woman approaches an elderly man. More often than not, in a caregiver setting, dad or grandpa is now alone, his spouse has died, a caregiver is put into the home, and that caregiving relationship goes very, very quickly to a quote-unquote romantic relationship in which the caregiver basically persuades the man to sign, more often than not, a will. And or a power of attorney. Of course, the power of attorney she promptly uses to run to the bank to withdraw money, and the will she uses when he dies to take his house. She may try and take his house while he's alive, too, with a power of attorney. So, and this romance really involves basically physical intimacy. And we see it on a regular basis. It's a stunning epidemic, and people are often reluctant to talk about it because they're embarrassed that their family member did it and that they got taken advantage of.
On page 137 of your book, Don't Let Dementia Steal Everything, you tell the story of Olga and a Chicago couple. The wife dies. The husband is still around. He's going to church, and now there's a woman that's showing up at church with him, and they're seen all around town. They're always together, and the family just observes as she sort of worms her way into his life, and the kids are worried about that. Dad has become, you write, more withdrawn from family activities, and then he doesn't call or return calls like he used to. He stopped sending birthday cards to the grandkids, which always had a $50 bill in them. Right after Thanksgiving, we got a call from a lifelong family friend who is Dad's accountant, and he urged us to visit the dad.
Well, typically what happens, John, is that this romance the woman almost always attempts to isolate the man from his family, his friends, his neighbors, so that she can basically dominate him, control him, and quite bluntly, trade sex for signatures.
But if he wants to do that and is of a sound mind to do that, he gets to do that, right?
If he's of a sound mind, yes. But in many instances, he's not.
Would you say more often than not?
More often than not, he has dementia.
I don't mean to belabor the point, but I could see an 80-year-old man. How old was Olga's boyfriend here? He was, you mentioned it.
I think he was in his 70s.
No, I think he was older than that. He was 86 years old, the daughter of a physically healthy 86-year-old man. So this guy's 86.
But Olga was 65.
Yeah, right. Okay, so she's younger. She's not 24, but, and I guess the age difference doesn't matter. I mean, she could be 87 herself if he's not of a sound mind to make a decision that she's going to control the finances, then the court would not support that, right? If he's not of a sound mind.
If he's not of sound mind, the court would consider appointing a guardian, okay, to determine basically to run his life. Guardians come in two forms, a guardian of the estate, management of money, guardian of the person for health care. So the reality here is that the question is dad or the man cognitively impaired in any manner? Has he been diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease, and to what degree?
And I'm just entertaining the idea that maybe some guys are like, no, I don't have dementia. I'd like to have sex with a 64-year-old or a 24-year-old, and if that's going, and I'd like to share my life with this person, and they're pretty and younger than me, and that's my decision. But that does not happen that often, you're telling me.
It doesn't happen that often. What we're finding is, and I firmly believe that in some instances, women are trained in Eastern Europe to come to Chicago or other metropolitan areas and basically focus on this. I mean, we've been involved in cases where it's a race to the airport. You know,
what do you mean?
The caregiver hits the bank for, you know, $200,000, and they're trying to get to O'Hare on an international flight.
Oh,
before,
really?
Yeah. I mean, that's a little less common, but we've been involved in several cases like that.
Do you think the Bill Belichick, Jordan Hudson story relates to any of this in any way?
Well, so far, nobody said Bill Belichick is cognitively impaired. So, you know, his behavior during the now notorious CBS interview, I think, was unusual because he's never been, in my observation, polite to the press. But I haven't read anything or seen anything that says Bill Belichick is cognitively impaired.
Yeah, and you can't judge it by the stupidity of it all. And, you know, stupidity isn't the right word, but it's just so weird that you wonder what's going on here. But that's not a determination of cognitive impairment, is it?
It is not. It is not. I think everybody thinks it's certainly unusual, the 50-year age difference. And everybody in the past has seen Bill Belichick very strong, very gruff, very, you know,
independent
and powerful. And that isn't what the world saw in the CBS interview.
No, well, it's not what all the reporting would indicate, that however much in control of his life and his football teams and his, you know, every facet of his life, it seems like he doesn't care what people think, he's going to do it his way. And then you have this 24-year-old who is dictating some of the answers to simple questions. But again, that may be his, you know, sound decision. That is, he's happy to have that kind of a relationship and suffer the embarrassment that comes with it.
Well, I've been involved in scenarios where the man, frequently says, you know, I'm lonely. I want a companion, and this happens to be my companion. And then when you pursue it any further in terms of what are her demands in terms of you signing documents, what are her demands in terms of you giving her money, you know, it kind of opens the door. But again, with Belichick, we don't have any information that would indicate that that's happening.
What are the chances of clawing it back? Let's forget about Belichick for a moment and just say the Olga has the money now, and we can demonstrate that dad has dementia. Can we get the money back?
Assuming that she hasn't spent it, assuming she hasn't transferred it overseas, You know, if she, we frequently see scenarios where the wrongdoer, the financial exploiter, buys a car. If they buy real estate, we can get it back. You know, but if the money is slipping through their hands like fluid or liquid, you're not getting it back.
Right. So you could sell the car. Maybe you could sell the real estate.
Right.
You'll take a haircut on that, but at least you'll get some of the value back.
Correct.
But if it was spent on trips and food and clothes, good luck, right?
You'll never get it back.
Okay. Lots of questions for Carrie Pecker coming in, the elder law attorney. Let's see how many of them we can knock out. You ready, Mr. Peck?
I am ready.
Okay. Here we go. Let's talk to Pam. You're on WGN. Pam, how can we help you?
Hi, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call. As you said before, I'm looking, how do you start an intervention? Do you talk to the person that's blocking everybody, or do you talk to the couple that is being manipulated? How does that start? How does an intervention start?
Well, the family should talk to the person who you believe is being exploited.
We've tried that. Okay. We've tried that.
Then the next question is, can you have that individual evaluated by a highly qualified doctor to determine if they're cognitively impaired? And if they're cognitively impaired, then in theory, we can go in and ask that a court appoint a guardian, perhaps a family member, to manage their financial affairs and their health care affairs.
What about that, Pam?
So we have to say, we have to have them go to the doctor. I mean, that's going to be that might be.
I get it. Good luck on that. Yeah.
Well, we work with a doctor that can go to the house and you can take them in. So a very, very capable.
So you knock on the door and say, hey, Dad, I'm here. And this is Dr. Smith. And announced or otherwise, we're going to have a visit and the doctor's going. And would that hold up? That would be the evaluation, Carrie?
Absolutely. That evaluation holds up every day of the week, provided the doctor concludes.
What kind of doctor makes a house call like that? There is
a very highly qualified psychiatrist.
There are people that do that.
They are.
Wow.
And we can get that reference from calling your office?
Sure. Yeah, you can.
Pam, I'm going to put you on hold and keep listening, and good luck to you on that. That's exactly what we're talking about.
That's exactly what we're talking about. And Pam, you know, we would talk about you considering to engage our law firm in a guardianship case.
What about Bill? You're on WGN. Bill, how can we help you? You're on the air with Carrie Peck.
Thank you for taking my call. My dad told my brother, he gave him a business card for a lawyer to reach out to in case something happens to him. But my dad at times has gone uncontactable for a couple months at a time. So we were concerned that during these couple of months, if he happened to pass away, his wife wouldn't pass the information on to us until things have been liquefied and removed and gone. Is there a way to combat that or to keep ahead of it?
Well, I'm assuming that the wife is not your mother. Is that correct?
Correct, yeah. Remarried.
Yeah. So, I mean, do they both disappear or just Dad disappears?
Both of them. They've gone on cruises, but we also found out that he had been in the hospital for a month without any communication from her or him.
But this would not be a case of the woman using up the funds that the kids are either hopeful to have or think is being misused. If it's his wife, she can do with that money, they can do with that money whatever they want, right, Bill?
Well, he gave my dad a business card for a lawyer and said, if something happens to me, call that number.
And what does that mean? What is something? I die or I have dementia?
Yeah, that's what we took it as, is if he passed away. So that there was something set up, but if he's passed away and gone for a period of time before we know about it.
Well, I think your concern is warranted. I would ask Dad if you can contact that lawyer and allow the lawyer to authorize you to review the documents during his lifetime.
But what if the dad does have dementia? The mom does not. The wife does not. The family doesn't have much recourse, do they?
You know, between a husband and wife, there's not a lot of recourse. You can assert that, you know, post-death, that Dad had dementia and was unduly influenced. But by a wife, you know, frankly, men are unduly influenced, so to speak, by their wives every day.
Ha, ha, ha. Okay, but maybe I just want more contact with my mom or dad in the other adult is not cooperating. Can I force that issue? It's like, okay, it's your money. Do whatever you want. But come on, you guys. Where are you? And how can I insist that you stay in touch?
Well, I don't think you can insist. I think all you can do is express concern for Dad. You want to make sure that he's safe. You want to make sure that he's in good health. But, you know, certainly, as long as Dad's cognitively intact, they can go away and nothing you can do about it.
Okay, Bill, good luck to you. I'm going to give Carrie's phone number and email address here or website, and you all can reach out to him specifically with more details. About the Bill Belichick story, we're still getting comments. Most of my friends and most of my work colleagues think Bill Belichick's relationship is great, and I'm just jealous for thinking it's strange. I'm 46, and I don't know if I could date a 25-year-old, let alone when I'm in my 70s, says this person. My uncle chose to pursue a relationship with a much younger caregiver for his wife, who was suffering from a bad stroke, paying her significant money. He is of sound mind. At first, the family was in an uproar, but I came to realize it was his only happiness in life. So the wife needs care. He brings in a much younger caregiver, and he's giving her a lot of money and probably enjoys her company, and I don't mean anything by that. That's up to the dad. He can do whatever he wants.
100% agreed.
Yeah. What about Rosemary? You're on WGN with Carrie Peck. Rosemary, how can we help you?
Yes, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I'm confused, Mr. Peck, about my power of attorney. I have a trust and a will. My brother is my power of attorney for financial issues with his daughter as my backup. I went to my bank. His name is on my checking account, but I went to my bank to see if I took his name off the checking account, if he would still have access to everything if I should pass and my safety deposit box. And I was told that once I passed away, the power of attorney meant nothing, that he would not have access to anything unless they came in and signed some other papers. Is that accurate?
It's 100% accurate. A power of attorney dies when you die. It's a lifetime document. You can only use it during lifetime. Your brother could go in if you became disabled and get access to the money to pay for your care, but it dies when you die.
What if the husband dies? Thank you for the call. I see that line just disconnected. 708 says, what if the husband dies and the wife has two grown-up children, but they are not the husband's? Who inherits the money? There's no will here. I'm going to see if I get that right. So a husband dies, the wife has two grown children, but they are not the husband's kids, but they are the wife's.
If the husband has no children, wife inherits everything. If the husband has children by obviously a different woman, then they're likely to split 50-50.
With the wife and the husband's children.
Correct.
Would the stepkids be included?
They don't directly inherit, but don't forget, the wife has then the ability to leave those assets to them.
Okay, but mom's husband has passed away. I'm not in line for any money unless mom gets it and decides to give it to me.
Correct.
Yeah, which is different than dad's biological kids.
Correct.
They might split it with the wife.
Correct.
Fine.
Where this goes south, John, is that if mom and dad have minor children, okay, and dad dies, then mom gets 50% and the minor children get 50%, which means you need to go into court and have a guardian appointed for the kids.
This may be a question for Terry Savage, but I'll ask it to you. To Carrie Peck, my husband and I are both 73. Can we still get long-term health care insurance, and would it be cost prohibitive at 73?
I would call the Gordon and Associates firm and talk to them directly about it.
Yeah, they're sponsors here, Gordon Associates, and actually, I just got an email from somebody today who was very thankful that they had called him. Yeah. My sister just died, leaving no will. She was single, never married. She has four siblings. What happens to our assets?
The assets go to the siblings.
Split, you know, 25, 25, 25.
Right, exactly. Fourth to each.
And then you all can fight amongst yourselves because one of you is really good to mom and the other two weren't or whatever.
Yeah, but one of them needs to be appointed administrator with no will. You need to open a decedent's estate in probate court. You know, give us a call. We can talk about it.
Okay, we're out of time, but it's a lot of ground covered once again with Carrie Peck at peckritchie.com, peckritchie.com, or 312-201-0900, right?
That's correct. Thank you, John. Great to be here.
It's always weird when you come in, and helpful, too.